This program is part of the Cosmic Potato Podcast Network. For more shows like this, visit our website at cosmicpotato.com.
In 1966, the world was introduced to a new frontier of science fiction known as Star Trek. Since then, it has grown into a franchise spanning multiple TV series and motion pictures. People from all walks of life have grown up with Star Trek. It has molded them, taught them life lessons, and helped to build them into who they are. These are the stories of those fans. This is their Prime Direction.
Hey guys, welcome to the Prime Direction. My name is Sean Ray, and my preamble this month is not going to be as long as it was last month. Last month I had a bit of a hiatus that I had to get back from. I just want to remind you of a couple of things and tell you something as well. June 8th, 9th, and 10th, I'm going to be at Magic City Con. That is in the Birmingham area, so if you live in the southeast part of the country, or if you're going to be in that part of the country in June, come on out. It's at the Hyatt Regency Hotel, which is attached to the River Chase Galleria. It's not very expensive. I think it's $25, $30 for the entire 3 days. There's going to be some celebrities out there. I know Ming Chen is supposed to be there from Comic Book Men and a few others, signing autographs, lots of vendors. I'm going to be doing some panels, going to be playing some games, giving away some prizes, all that kind of stuff. So come on out. And if you do come, look for me. Send me a message on Facebook. Let me know that you're going to be there, and we will hook up and we'll chat. Also, I want to remind you that the Cosmic Potato Podcast Network has a feed wherever you normally get your podcasts from. Make sure you subscribe to that. And every time a new episode of any show that's on the network, whether it be this one or Cosmic Potato or World War G or Captain Game Show or Review-A-Mania, all of those new episodes will be automatically put on that feed, and you'll be able to download them straight from there, so you don't have to subscribe to all the individual feeds if you don't want, and the makers of those shows will still get credit for your download. All right, my guest this month is Gary Mitchell. Gary Mitchell was a character in the very first episode of the original series. I kid, this is not the same Gary Mitchell. Gary is big into the convention circuit, so if you've been to any conventions in the southeast, you may have met him before, especially if you've been to Dragon Con. He goes there every year. He does a lot of fan panels discussing various topics in our fandom geekery, movies and TV shows and things like that. So I really enjoyed talking to him. He's a lot of fun to talk to, and I hope that you enjoyed this interview. If you want to be on the show, if you are a Star Trek fan, if you have been a fan your entire life and you want to talk to me about it, then just send me an email at mail@cosmicpotato.com. I'm doing this show every month, so I'm looking for people to interview, all walks of life. All right, that's all I'm going to say this month. Enjoy the show. I don't know a lot about you. Joe just told me that he works at the on Dragon Con with you.
Correct.
I know I've seen your name come up several times on Facebook and things like that. So why don't you tell me where you're from and what you do?
Right now I am residing in Cumming, Georgia, which is just a little bit north of Atlanta. For a professional living, I work for an eyeglass manufacturer, and for not getting paid for it, but I do it for fun, I do podcasting, a little bit of writing, and a lot of convention work.
Yeah, okay.
I do work for Dragon Con, Hoolanta, officially, and then I also have guested at Congregate, which is up in North Carolina, and I may be going to Hypericon, but that's still kind of up in the air.
What's your favorite con to go to?
Dragon Con.
Really?
Yeah.
I've never made it there. I mean, every year I tell them I'm going this year, and I just don't end up doing it. But maybe this year.
Yeah. It's a ball. It's a coming up on 5 day now party. If there's something you're into, it's there. They get I think the official last year was somewhere around just under 80,000 people. But, you know, if you're into, you know, X-Files or costuming or comic books or, you know, just that one weird little show that was on in 1997 for six episodes, it's there. Yeah, it's I have a favorite game of Nothing is Obscure. You know, you see somebody dressed, like, as I said, as a one side character from one show, and you think nobody's going to recognize him, and there's like 18 people going, "Oh, it's so and so."
So you do a lot of guest panels, like interviewing people and stuff like that. I know Joe does. I didn't know if you did as well.
I've done a few. I tend to stay away from that, mainly because nothing wrong with the actual celebrity people, but every time I've done like four or five, and every time I have, something's gone sideways. So I just figure I'm cursed and I'm going to stay away from that. I'll just do fan panels.
Well, who was your favorite person to do a panel with?
Oh, God. Well, I have to say Gary Lockwood, just because he played Gary Mitchell on Star Trek.
Right.
You know, so I'm legally obligated, since we share the same name, to say him. Yeah. Let's see. Bruce Boxleitner and Mia Furlan were fantastic. Of my irregulars at the other that are not celebrity people, I love doing stuff with Michael French, Michael Faulkner, Michael Bailey, Michael Williams. I know a lot of Michaels. There's a reason this year we're actually doing a panel called the Council of Michaels, because we know like 19 of them.
Yeah.
Well, Dave, also known as the Phantom Troublemaker on Needless Things podcast, he's a ball. God, it's just – we have a group, Sue Kaisenweather. I can't not mention her, and Casey. God, there's just – like I said, we've got about 30 or 40 people that we call our irregulars, and every single one of them, I love them to death.
Okay. Well, what is your earliest memory of Star Trek?
Being around 4 years old and watching the animated series. Mm-hmm. Is my first. That was my introduction to the show, and it hooked me. And then I can't imagine or remember a time in my life that Star Trek really wasn't there. Starting with the animated series and then watching the original series in reruns. I loved it so much that for my fifth or sixth birthday, Mom got me a few, I don't know if you remember, color forms.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, there was a Star Trek original series, Color Forms, that was kind of based off the animated series that she got me. I played with that thing till it fell apart.
Well, just so I can gauge the time period that we're talking about, how old are you?
I will turn 48 this year.
Okay. So you're just a little bit older than me. So you were probably watching the animated series when it was originally airing, I guess?
I believe so.
Okay, because the first time that I saw it, I think they were showing it in reruns on Nickelodeon.
Right.
And I'm 40. But I think I knew of Star Trek. It was one of those shows that was kind of on, but I never really sat down and watched it as a little kid. Mm-hmm. But then I saw this cartoon come on, and I was like, they made a cartoon of that? Is this new? And like, no, it's not new. It's been out for a while. But so did you consider yourself like a Star Trek fan from the very beginning?
Pretty much. My third grade class picture, I'm in a red shirt.
Oh, yeah.
that my mom got me at a secondhand store, of all places. And so in the picture, the Delta Shield is kind of peeling up a little. The glue is starting to give out, but I didn't care. I was still wearing it anyway.
So did you transition over into watching the actual show pretty quickly? Did somebody introduce you to it?
I found it, and I was like, oh, Star Trek. And, I really can't remember the exact first time I watched it, but I can tell you I have many, many memories of finding out, okay, what time does it come on? I got to be home at that time, running home from school or out playing in the summer, and, oh, it's time to go home, watch Star Trek.
Yeah.
You know, and not under, you know, and being 8 years old and not understanding how syndication works, I always hoping that it would be one that I hadn't seen yet.
Right. Did you start collecting a lot of toys and things like that?
I would have if they were there. There was not a lot of Star Trek toys when I was a kid. I mean, I had the Kirk and Spock Migos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I also had, from the animated series, the kind of like a pterodactyl person. The main thing I remember about him is his wings were the cloth between his, you know, like he was a flying squirrel instead of a pterodactyl. And the Gorn. And that kind of cemented my love of the Gorn. They're like my, I think they're my favorite Star Trek alien race.
Yeah.
So I played with those. I had like one die-cast Enterprise, but there was not a lot out until the motion picture. And I got all the Happy Meals.
Yeah. Yeah, that's something that has come up. I asked that question of everybody, and it really depends on the age of the person that I'm talking to, because some people that watch like the original series, it's just like you said, because merchandising for films like that didn't really come about until Star Wars came out. Mm-hmm. And then after Star Wars came out, then every movie wanted to have a huge toy line. But if I'm talking to somebody that's a little younger, that their first Star Trek was The Next Generation or Deep Space Nine or something like that, mm-hmm. then they have more memories of toys being out. There seems to have been a lot of toys in the 70s that were just regular toys, and they just slapped Star Trek on the side of it.
Oh yeah,
like I saw walkie-talkies and flashlights and things like that.
Oh yeah, that Spock helmet that goes around all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I saw a thing today. I actually shared on a Facebook of Star Trek candy cigarettes.
I saw like, that. Wow. Yeah, I didn't see that. I don't think they're smoking in the 23rd century, hopefully. Okay, so was your Star Trek fan? Well, you just said that you wore a red shirt in your photograph. So I always ask the person that I'm talking to if their fandom was something that they felt like they could just be proud of and just let their geek flag fly, or if they felt like they had to kind of hide it because of bullying and things like that.
Yeah, I was definitely bullied for it. I was definitely, you know, the era of being a geek was being the outsider, but I really couldn't help it. Yeah. You know, I could not hide it. My geek flag was out whether I wanted it out or not.
Yeah.
but I would occasionally find the other geek. And I remember one time there was this one guy I made friends with on the school bus, and we had a week-long raging debate on whether or not the Enterprise could take out the Argo.
Yeah, it's one of those things that the kids that were doing the bullying.
Oh, yeah.
You're talking about the mid to late 70s probably, right? So
late 70s, early 80s, yeah.
Yeah, so they were going home and watching this stuff. I mean, they were into Star Wars and things like that. And then you run into somebody now that you know used to bully you when you were a kid, and they've got on an Iron Man t-shirt mm-hmm. or something like that, you know, so because it's the norm now. But
yeah. Yeah, well, we've won. We took over. We are the culture now.
Right. Were you into comics and novels and things like that?
Oh yeah, I was definitely into comics. I started with Archie and Sergeant Rock, and then branched out into superheroes mm-hmm. after yeah. that. But when the Star Trek comic books came out, I grabbed those. I still have, I believe, somewhere the two issues of DC's Who's Who and Star Trek that they put out. In the late 80s when they were doing Who's Who's for everything.
Right.
but, yeah, and I read all the Star Trek novels I could get my hands on because, you know, it helped keep the show going. It was like, oh, more adventures.
Yeah, yeah. What but, about you know, today? And, are you still reading any of this? Because they still got a Star Trek title that I think is based on the Kelvin universe that comes out. Have you read any of that?
I have. I read it for about the first. I've gone in and out on it. I read like the first eight or so issues, and then I kind of dropped out. Then I went back when they did a crossover with Deep Space Nine storyline, and it was a really good storyline. Basically, Q, starting out in the Prime Trek universe, he pops over into the Kelvin universe and kicks them into the timeline of Deep Space Nine in that timeline. So it was really interesting to see what the Kelvin timeline by DS9 era looked like.
That's cool. I've got to look that up.
And that was a ball. And I keep meaning to go back and get more into it, but my comic budget right now is like almost next to nothing. So
yeah. Well, comics cost a lot more than they used to.
Mm-hmm.
I picked up a couple of the Kelvin timeline comics a while back, and it seemed like they were trying to go back and take original series storylines and like redo them for the Kelvin, because I know the one of the ones I read was the Gary Mitchell storyline, but yes, it takes place in the Kelvin timeline. I don't remember if I liked it or not.
I thought it was okay. I thought they cheaped out at the end. I love the fact that they had Sully Kellerman's character. Basically, she'd heard of Kirk's Wormanizing, went, I want nothing to do with you guys. And so she wasn't there. That was one of the big changes. So they had to end it differently. And if I remember correctly, Kirk manages to talk Gary Mitchell down for a minute, and then Spock phasers him and takes him out. And I was like, eh.
Yeah.
No, if that would have worked, it would have worked in the original series. You should have come up with something different. But, you know, how do you beat a guy like that without another? But, you know.
Yeah, it's like you're trying to do this big storyline. You're trying to get it all done in like 25 pages, you know. So you just go for a generic ending or something like that. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
But it was a neat idea of doing the classic Trek episodes in the Kelvin timeline to see how they would play out differently.
Yeah.
Some were more successful than others.
So you weren't watching when the show was originally airing, obviously, because it was the 60s. But when you were watching, you didn't have any conception of the show ending, and you don't get any new episodes because you were just watching the reruns anyway. So when the movie came along, how excited were you about that?
Oh, I was over the moon. It was new Star Trek. It looked cool. I love the fact we were going to get, you know, on the big screen. I liked the and I still love the refit of the Enterprise from the movies. The first one, when I finally saw it, I think it was on cable. Unfortunately, you know, being around 11 years or about 11 years old at the time when it finally hit cable, it was a little slow.
Yeah.
So I've come to appreciate it more, but at the time I was just like, oh, shoot somebody, do something.
I think that the first time that I saw the first one was probably in the mid 80s, and I had just started getting into the show. It was coming on like a local station on Sunday afternoons or something like that, and I would watch it, and I would just happen to be in the video store because I didn't even realize that there were movies, and there was probably three of them out on video by that point. Mm-hmm. So I'm in the video store and I see these movies. I'm like, hey, I got to check these out. And then I rent the first one, take it home and watch it. And I thought it was boring. You know, and I was probably 9 years old, something like that. So some of the visuals I liked, but I was at an age where I had seen Star Wars a few times. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that kind of blew it out of the water for me. But how do you feel about the movie now? After you've probably seen it 30 times.
now that I've seen it, it's still slow.
Yeah.
But it's definitely very pure Star Trek. It's all big ideas. It's all, what does it mean to be human? Finding your place in the universe. There's some gorgeous visuals. Great soundtrack. Mm-hmm. The opening with the Klingons getting eaten by V'ger is still great.
Yeah.
You know, so while I don't go back to it and watch it often, you know, I appreciate it for what it is. It was definitely, you know, I like that it went for the cerebral ideals of Star Trek. Unfortunately, it's a movie. You got to pick that stuff up.
Yeah. Well, they started coming out with a film pretty much every 2 years. You got, you know, Star Trek 2 and Star Trek 3 and Star Trek 4 all came out pretty quickly after that. And as you were getting older, I guess you were going to the theater to see them by that point. Yeah.
I didn't get to see two in the theater, but I caught it on HBO. Uh-huh. And this was back in the day when HBO, if they ran a movie, they ran it like six times a day.
Right, yeah.
So I know that summer when it hit HBO, I watched it at least 20, 30 times, enough to really annoy my stepfather. I drove him up the wall. But I loved it. And, you know, then, you know, there's a reason everybody calls it the best. You know, Spock's death, the action, Khan being pretty much one of the best villains Trek's ever had.
Yeah.
So, but I did get to see the third one in the theater, and I loved it so much that I actually snuck back into the theater and watched it a second time right after I watched it the first time.
Right.
and just it still breaks my heart watching the Enterprise blow up.
Yeah, the third movie kind of gets a bad rap because, I mean, it was having to follow up on the second one, and the second one was so good, you know, mm-hmm. we were just expecting it. We always expect the next one to be better, and right. sometimes, and it's usually not. But the third one, I went back and watched it not too long ago. It's not a bad movie. I enjoyed it. I mean, yeah, some of the scenery on the planet looks kind of fake, you know, yeah. stuff like that. But, you know, that's Star Trek. A lot of their sets look fake.
Yeah. Well, it's got so much going against it. That, you know, I love Leonard Nimoy, and he became a fantastic director, but this is his first directing job, so it's a novice director. Mm-hmm. The budget had been slashed, which is another thing. You know, the motion picture had a budget. The second one, they cut the budget in half. Third one, they cut that in half, you know, so which leads to, you know, the planet looking cheap and like yeah. I said, but you know, and then the whole, you know, well, we have to bring Spock back, and but that's what works. Again, it's if you can look past the deficiencies, which I think I say this a lot about Star Trek just in general, if you can look past the budget deficiencies, there are great stories there, and it's a good story about friendship and how far you'll go to save your friend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it doesn't reach the heights that the second one does with the meditations on aging and what it means to get older. But it's still a good movie. And then the fourth one's just fun.
Yeah, yeah.
Fifth one, I won't defend it. You know, it's – and there are so many back and forth conflicting stories of what Shatner wanted versus what the studio could deliver, but that's Shatner saying it, so, you know, I take it with a grain of salt.
Right.
But, yeah, the fifth one, ugh.
what's your favorite one out of those original series movies?
Like everybody, it's the second one. You know, of the classic cast movies, which, you know, it's 2 through 6? Yeah, mm-hmm. 6. You know, the second one still holds up. It holds up as a movie. It holds up as a Star Trek movie. It holds up as a revenge story. Again, the meditations on aging. And it's really Shatner's best acting, period. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's never better as Kirk as when he is in that movie. He actually performs.
Right. Yeah, and you've got an entire movie where you've got a hero and a villain that are never on screen together at the same time. They never actually physically meet each other in that movie.
Mm-hmm. But they make it work.
Yeah.
I remember one of my favorite anecdotes about the movie is they were talking to Ricardo Montalban about it, and he was like, originally he was going to turn it down because he was like, well, I'm not on screen very often. But then he was reading it again and realized that even when he wasn't on screen, they were talking about him.
Right, yeah. So do you think that was at his actual chest in that movie?
According to everybody who's on the movie, yes. So I am going to – I will bow to the consensus.
Yeah.
Although, damn.
Yeah, right, right. I don't know exactly how old he was at that point, but yeah, I saw a I heard a podcast where they were talking about it. I had never thought about it. I never really even noticed that it looked kind of fake. But after I heard it, I went back and I watched it again. I was like, I don't know. I mean, it's either plastic or he's got a lot of oil on it.
Yeah, it's one or the other.
Yeah. So the Next Generation started in 1987.
Yes.
So how excited were you for that?
I was over the moon. Star Trek was coming back.
Right.
And I remember being there. I remember watching it. And I remember thinking, what the hell is this? Because, you know, Next Generation eventually found its legs. But that pilot is so rough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, that whole first season's rough. But, you know, it's that pilot. I was just like, what in the hell is going on? I liked Q. I liked Picard. I liked the fact that the security chief was a lady. But still, I was like, the hell?
Yeah, there's something about that first – well, really the first two seasons that I know there's good stuff in there because mm-hmm. I've seen it.
Yeah.
But there's not enough good stuff there for me to want to go back and watch it.
Yeah.
Because usually when I watch Next Generation, if I go to Netflix and I want to watch a Next Generation episode, I skip the first two seasons completely most of the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because most of them are skippable. I mean, there's a few in there. There are a few that are worth watching. The second time Q shows up, Skin of Evil is actually a decent episode where they kill Yar, which was a shock. You know, nobody dies. What the hell? Even if, you know, I agree with a lot of people, it was kind of a stupid death, but still, the fact that somebody died, that was big deal.
Yeah, they didn't do that a whole lot back then. They didn't they didn't usually kill main characters like that.
Oh yeah, you know, if you weren't a red shirt, you were safe.
Yeah, yeah. But now with, you know, we've got Game of Thrones, you nobody's safe.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah, but it wasn't until, like, you know, it wasn't towards the end of the second season and the start of the third season that it was like, okay, I'm really digging this. I'm liking this story.
Yeah.
And then, you know, when they bring in the Borg and have that cliffhanger, and I still remember, I viscerally remember watching the episode. I was hanging out at a friend's dorm room and the story's going, and I'm like, how are they going to wrap this up? There's only like 15 minutes left.
Right.
You know, because, you know, as much as I enjoy Next Generation, and its biggest problem for me is that every episode you got that big reset button at the end.
Yeah.
And I was just like, how are they going to wrap this up? How are they going to wrap this up? And then that to be continued. I was like, mother!
What about Deep Space Nine? So, the Next Generation was on for 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think it was in the beginning of the sixth season, they decided they were going to bring another show.
Right.
And it was going to be... it was going to run alongside, so they were, you know, you were going to get back-to-back episodes every week and stuff.
Yes.
How did you feel about Deep Space Nine when it started?
I remember getting together with my friends and doing a viewing party. And again, it's those first episodes are rough. We were like, well, this is pretty cool, but you mean he's not going anywhere?
Yeah.
We're just going to sit here in this space station over Bajor. And I just remember also watching... Because one of the big things in the promos coming out was, you know, it's going to be this space station, there's going to be a wormhole, there's going to be all these stories. And for, like, almost the entire pilot, nothing happens with the wormhole until almost near the end. And I just kept watching and waiting and waiting. When the wormhole thing going to happen? When's that going to pop up?
Yeah.
But, you know, I liked Sisko. I liked the Bajorans ever since Rolaren came on board Next Gen. And it was interesting to see. I wasn't a huge fan of the Cardassians when they had shown up. You know, I was like, oh, we're trying to do another Klingon knockoff. But I came to appreciate them over the course of Deep Space Nine. And once Deep Space Nine's actual storyline meta plot kicks in, then it's like, it's fantastic. It's some of the best Trek ever.
What did you think about Worf becoming a main character on that show? Do you think it saved the show? Or, well, I guess it did kind of save the show, but did you think it was necessary for him to become a major player on that show? Did it take away from the show at all for you?
No, I think it added something. Well, for one, it gave us another familiar face. It gave us all the Klingon stuff. You know, everybody loves the Klingons. And Worf was one of my favorite characters from Next Gen, so getting more of him made me very happy.
Yeah.
Especially in my circle of friends, one of the things that annoyed us about Next Gen was every episode where somebody had to prove how tough they were, they beat up Worf.
Right.
You know, so every time Worf showed up, it was like, oh no, Worf's going to get dissed again. Yeah, one of my favorite moments, we were watching that one Worf episode where he's popping through the different dimensions, and we see like 16 Worfs on 16 different shuttles, and he can't diss all of us, not all at once! So getting to see him be, you know, recognized as an important character and the storylines they did with him, it was very cool.
There's something about Worf that he's a Klingon, but he's like the least Klingon of the Klingons that are on any of those shows. Because, you know, whenever I see Klingons, you know, they're laughing and drinking and all that, and he always just looks annoyed. Because I was watching an episode of The Next Generation the other night, and I can't remember the title, but it was a I think it was in the last season. It was the one where they the holodeck has that train and like the Enterprise is becoming sentient or something.
Oh yeah.
And Counselor Choi tells him to go with the engineer up to the engine to shovel some coal. And the look he gives her is just like, why am I the one that has to shovel coal? But that he was doing that all the time, I felt like.
Yeah, he was always very much put upon and didn't have any time for this bull.
Yeah.
He was definitely much more serious, proud warrior waist guy than the regular Klingons who are just like, we're gonna drink and beat people up. and so, but you know, I think what encapsulates Worf best is the bit from the Q episode where they do Robin Hood, and he goes, "Sir, I protest. I am not a merry man."
Right. Yeah.
It's like, yep, that's Worf in a nutshell.
Yep. Well, okay, so the Next Generation went off the air.
Mm-hmm.
Deep Space Nine was still there.
Yes.
And but they basically ended the Next Generation so that they could make a movie.
Yes.
Were you excited that they were going to make a movie? And how did you feel about the movie when you saw it?
I was very excited, especially at the idea of, you know, crossing over, you know, getting Kirk and Picard on screen at the same time. Mm-hmm. I think the execution left a lot to be desired. It definitely felt more like a two-part TV episode that got thrown on the big screen as opposed to a movie.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
There's a lot of the logic problems of, well, if we keep them from if we change the course of the Nexus so that it didn't go through the planet, so that he never went into it, so it didn't blow up, then Kirk's still in there. So why don't we just go back in and get him out again? Or, you know, it's just, wait, you're making my brain hurt.
Yeah, because I've always felt like, well, if so Kirk gets killed. He mm-hmm. falls. The bridge falls on him, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then the Nexus ribbon comes down and takes Sauron, and I would presume Picard would go in there as well.
Yeah.
So if Picard goes in there, then he's back in the Nexus, then he can just turn around and come back out whenever he wants and start the whole thing over.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, that's the other thing. This ribbon is flying through space, and it still has both of them in there, if you think about it too hard.
Yeah, yeah. So so he could get into an infinity loop and just start doing the whole thing over and over and over and over.
Yeah, and honestly, Kirk deserved a better death. He deserved to go out saving the Enterprise or saving somebody's life or fighting something as opposed to, you know, oh, and then the bridge fell. You know, it's better than the original of him just getting shot down in the back like a, you know, the first idea, but still, I mean, he deserves, you know, if he had actually died at the beginning saving the Enterprise, that would have been fitting. I think that, you know, that's the way Kirk should go out, but then Shatner went and wrote a book that brought him back anyway, so.
Yeah. Did you read those books?
No.
No, you didn't. Okay.
No, I read one Tech War novel, and that was enough. I was
Well, I put in quotation marks. Put wrote in quotation marks because I'm sure he didn't. He didn't write anything, but I did. I read. I think he's written like 8 of them now, but the first 3 were a trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
And in the first one, most of it takes place like in his timeline before Generations and all that happened. And it was all about him falling in love with this girl that was like half Klingon and half Romulan or something like that, and saving her world. And then the second one picks up like right after Generations, and the Borg come along and they beam his remains to their ship and they bring him back to life, you know. I'm like, first of all, Kirk, I mean, Shatner doesn't know anything about the Borg.
Mm-hmm.
He's writing them all wrong. But, so the movie came out, and then the next year, or maybe around the same time, is when Voyager started.
Yes.
Did you like Voyager?
Not in the least. I always had my first problem with it, which I could never get over, was the fact that the Voyager was thrown as far as the original Enterprise was in one original series episode, and Spock and Scotty got them back by the end of the episode.
Right.
But here's the thing is I can appreciate Voyager for what it is, and I know it has a lot of fans, and it represents a lot of things for people, both in progressive and in, you know, role models in science. And I just could not hook into any of the characters. I tried. I gave it a season. I came back and watched it in a later season. I've tried to watch it recently, and I don't know what it is, but I just cannot get my hooks in any of those characters.
Yeah.
I thought when they brought in Seven of Nine, I thought that was crass. But yeah. But again, they managed to make her better as a character. I can appreciate that. They actually turned her into a character as opposed to, hi, I'm walking sex appeal.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just can't get into it. It's not my bag.
Well, you've got every series kind of has this character that's trying to become more human. You know, you mm-hmm. had Data in The Next Generation, and Deep Space Nine had Odo.
Right.
So Voyager, it was weird because they already had that character with the Doctor.
Right.
And then they bring along Seven of Nine, and she's doing the same thing, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, it just didn't work for me. But like I said, I know there are a lot of people who love it. There are bits of it I do like. I do like the Doctor, the hologram. I liked mm-hmm. all the episodes when Barclay came on. I would tune in for those. And I did tune in for the finale. But I think they got too wrapped up in doing hype episodes. Oh, we're going to do Run of the Borg. Oh, now we're going to run into a race that eats the Borg for lunch. What?
Right.
Fluidic space. What? How is that? Okay. You know, Star Trek. All right. But, yeah, it's just like I said. It didn't grab me. I don't know what it was.
I went back and rewatched the whole series. Well, I want to say a month or so ago. I finished it a month or so ago. I've been kind of rewatching it over the last year or so.
Mm-hmm.
But that first season, you're right, it's the same thing. The first season was rough because a lot of the characters were very wooden. You know, mm-hmm. it's like Garrett Wong. I'm sure he's a very nice person.
He is. I've met him. He's a very nice guy.
His acting in that, especially in the pilot, was terrible. He was like in a... He felt like he was in a high school play, you know.
Yeah.
And they did get better mm-hmm. as it went along. And some of the episodes of Voyager, I think, are the best of Star Trek. Now, mm-hmm. I'm not going to say all of them because there's a lot of stuff that I don't like. But yeah. There are some episodes in Voyager that I think are among mm-hmm. the best Star Trek episodes ever.
Yeah. For me, it's also – I think the other thing that really bothered me about it is there was such a squandered opportunity in what they were trying to do that I didn't think they followed up on, mm-hmm. which having this two crews of two different ships of diametrically opposed viewpoints of Star Trek and the McKee forced to inhabit the same ship and work together and the tension that should have come from that, and it never really was there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I felt like there should have – yeah, there really should have been more of that, especially between Janeway and Chakotay,
yeah.
I felt. And then the other thing I think that also ruined me is I was at a convention talking about the show before it came out, and Peter David pitched the idea of like how he thought they should do the show is if it's going to take this long to get back to Federation space, what if every season in the off season we just jump ahead like maybe 5 or 10 years? And we see it like as a generation ship.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, oh, that's an awesome idea. Oh, they're not doing that? Okay.
Yeah, they were in this. That was back in the day where you take your actors and make them sign 5-year contracts instead of one season contracts like they do now, so they can do what they want. But that whole Maquis Federation thing, they dropped almost immediately. It was like right after the pilot. We're not even going to talk about this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And they tried to bring it back a little bit later on in the series. But by that point, there were people that had just started the series and didn't even know what they were talking about. What are you talking about? Yeah. Who's the Maquis?
Yeah, that and the whole simple fact of, you know, they made a big thing in the pilot of, oh, we've only got this many photon torpedoes and we've only got these special gel pack things that run the computer systems of the ship. So as we go on, we're going to be more and more ragged. And then that never went anywhere. They always had plenty of photon torpedoes. They always had plenty of whatever they needed. Unless, you know, she needed coffee. Then all of a sudden, we were, oh, well, we're out of coffee.
Yeah, yeah. One of my co-hosts on one of my other shows on Cosmic Potato, Rick, pointed out to me a while back that there's an episode of Voyager called The Year of Hell.
Yes.
And it's basically what I said. It takes place over the course of a year, and all these terrible things are happening. And at the end of the episode, it all gets reset.
Yeah.
And from what I understand, from what he told me, the original idea of that the writers wanted was that they wanted what happened in that episode to carry on for the rest of the season, for the rest of the series, for those things to matter. And the network wouldn't do it. You know, Star Trek's got to reset at the end. You know, we can't kill characters. We can't have this much of a change. And right. So they wouldn't do it. And then some of those writers, after they left the series, they went and created Battlestar Galactica, which is a lot more along the lines of what they were trying to do, where things that happen in each episode actually matter for later episodes and things.
Yeah. And some of that I chalk up to the whole way syndication used to be. Mm-hmm. I mean, and for the longest time, you know, any TV show was, you know, I think spoiled now in this age of serialization, where continuity, where everything, every episode follows into every episode, and we have season long arcs, and we expect that now. You know, we don't have shows that are just, you know, unless it's like a crime drama, you know, something like, you know, Criminal Minds. There are no one and done shows anymore where you can just drop in, drop out. Because you have to, you know, it's like, oh, you want to watch Babylon 5 and it's in the middle of the third season? Well, too bad.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that, you know, so it's one of those things. I actually had a discussion with a friend of mine one time about, you know, when we were talking about before Discovery was even a thing, of like, if Star Trek comes back, do you want it to be serialized or do you want it to be, you know, bottle episodes? And, you know, we went back and forth on that. And if they were to do Voyager now, I think it could be really interesting if they went with that kind of not having to worry about, okay, at the end of the episode, we have to go back to everything's fine because the next episode, you don't know when someone's going to see it.
Yeah. Yeah. And another thing that, that bothered me in my rewatch was, the finale. Now the finale was not bad, but it felt like they were trying to do what the Next Generation had done with their finale, where all of a sudden you're going to see the future of these characters and you're going to see them as old people and what happened to them and all this kind of stuff, and then go back and forth in time and stuff like that. So I felt like they kind of, I mean, they did the episode well, but I felt like they were kind of retreading some things that had already been done, and I don't think that's fair to do when you're trying to do a finale. It should be something that's just for that show and not something that somebody else had done. But
yeah, and a lot of those flaws I chalk up to Berman and Braga. But
yeah, yeah.
I finally started to reach a place I think where I can accept Braga and forgive him for most of it, but Berman's still on my crap list.
Yeah. Well, what about Enterprise? How'd you feel about that show?
Again, it was a case where I felt it was like they had a great opportunity and they squandered it. And, you know, one of the funny things I remember is I'm actually friends with Steve Long, who wrote for the Star Trek role-playing game, which was out at the time. And he and I were having a discussion about, you know, what the next Star Trek series would be. And I talked about a prequel, and he's like, no, there's no way they'll do a prequel. They don't want to go backwards. They want to go forwards. Here comes Enterprise.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought, it was like, this is an interesting area to explore, but I think Star Trek should look forward and not backward, which is one of the problems I've got with Discovery right now, which I like more. But I thought Enterprise started decently, kind of faltered, but then in that fifth season when the new people took over, and they started doing those 2-3-episode story arcs and actually doing what I think the Enterprise should have been doing, which was filling in plot points. Like, here's why the Klingons have smooth foreheads. Here's what happened with all the augments.
Yeah.
That season I love. I think it's fantastic, especially the two-part mirror episode where we see what happened to the original Defiant.
Right. Yeah.
And I will admit part of it is because we get to see a Gorn kick some ass, but and I've always liked the mirror universe. So I think, like a lot of people, that most of Enterprise, it's still worth watching, but if you only watch one season of it, watch that fifth season until but stop before the finale, because again, you were talking about.
Yes. Yeah.
That finale is just terrible.
Yeah. And whereas I said that, that Voyager was retreading some things, but the episode was still kind of good. Mm-hmm. That episode was not good. You jump. What were they? They jump 8-9 years ahead of where the entire series had been already. And then not only that, you bring in characters from another show and make it more a Next Generation episode than an Enterprise finale.
Yeah. Yeah. Instead of getting the final trip with these characters and seeing what happened to them, it becomes Will Riker wants to play dress up. Mm-hmm. And so, and it throws the whole series into kind of a question of, well, how much of this is real and how much of this is supposition on the holodeck? But if you stop at the episode before that, where Archer gives the big speech in front of what's to become the Federation, that's a great finale.
Yeah.
And then there's this tacked on episode afterwards, which, and then they kill Trip, and I was like, no.
Yeah, and when they started doing, after that series ended, all these series, it's like after the actual series ends, then they do like a novel series that's supposed to continue the story. And the first thing they did in the Enterprise novels was say, Trip's not really dead.
Yeah.
And bring him back.
Because the fan base exploded.
Right, yeah, yeah.
It's like, you did what?
And a lot of that stuff with the first few seasons, it was the network's fault. You know, the network felt like, oh, we've got to change things. We've got to do something different. We're not even going to call it Star Trek. We're just going to call it Enterprise. You know,
and yeah,
when they finally stepped back and said, you know what, maybe these writers and producers know what they're doing. Let's let them do what they want to do. Then they started making good episodes. But by that point, the audience had already faltered away and the show got canceled. So.
Yeah, but the combination of the bad show running, the writing being kind of iffy, and I think at that point we kind of hit a bit of a Star Trek fatigue, I think, because ever since Next Generation, there hadn't been a year without any form of Star Trek.
Yeah.
So then, of course, there was also the competition from all the other shows that were starting to come out, B5, which I mentioned before. Alien Nation, other sci-fi shows were coming up.
And I think what you said about the about there being so many episodes out already of other series, I think that's one of the reasons why they did a prequel instead of going forward, because you get to this point when you've got almost 200 episodes of The Next Generation and the same number of episodes of Deep Space Nine and Voyager. You've made a lot of stories, and it's hard to create a story where you can't say, well, they should use the solution from that other story to solve this problem.
Yeah.
So you get to a point where anything that you write, the fans are going to start sending you letters and email and saying, why didn't they just do this that Picard did in this other episode? Oh, well, if you take the story and you move it back in time to where some of that technology doesn't exist yet, then you're free to write some different kinds of stories.
Yeah.
I think that's the same reason that Discovery is doing what they're doing as well.
Yeah, that's part of it. Yeah, and it really is a problem when you've written technology to the point of magic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I don't know if you've heard the song by the musician Voltaire, the USS Make Shit Up.
No.
Go look for it on YouTube. It's hilarious, but it's him talking about, how's the actual line go? You know, it doesn't matter what happens. We'll just make some shit up.
Right.
Yeah, it's bounce a graviton particle beam off the main deflector dish. That's the way we do things, lad. Take things as you wish.
Technobabble, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it doesn't matter if we're in a bind or in behind. We'll just make some shit up.
So The Next Generation made three more movies after Generations.
Mm-hmm.
How did you feel about those? Which one was your favorite? Which one was your least favorite?
It's not really fair to say because I still haven't watched Insurrection. I've heard enough bad things about it and seen enough clips that I was like, I have no interest. So if I had to pick a worst, I would pick that one, but it's not really fair since I haven't seen it. Mm-hmm. But I think like most people, First Contact, that one is a great story.
Yeah.
It's got great action. It's got the Borg. It's got the time travel. But I'm blanking on his name. The guy who plays Cochran, he's fantastic.
James Cromwell, yeah.
James Cromwell. So he's great. And it's a fun ride of a movie. It's also got a little bit of the whole Picard still dealing with the fallout from having been Borgerized. Mm-hmm. So that adds a little heft to it with his character. So it's fun. And then Nemesis is a mixed bag. I love Tom Hardy. I think he's really good in what he's trying to do, but it's a problematic movie. And I remember when it was coming out, they were selling one of the big points of it was the director is somebody who's not really a Star Trek fan, so he's going to bring a fresh take on it. Like, right. Maybe you should have gone with a fan.
Yeah.
Just saying. Or I understand.
Somebody that's at least seen the show.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, you know, because people like to take digs at him, but I think Frakes is a hell of a director. I think he's become a fantastic director, especially on TV, and he did very well at what he did. But so it would have been interesting for me to see what Insurrection or Nemesis would have been like in his hands. But still, I mean, just and then the whole killing Data thing, just because you know Brent Spiner didn't want to do it anymore.
Well, he wasn't going to have to do it anymore. He just didn't know it yet. but yeah, and then in the comics after that, of course, they brought Data back because they left that open, just they did when they killed Spock. You know, you knew from that last shot that Spock was going to come back, so they did the same thing with Data. Which to hear Nimoy tell the story, I don't know how truthful he was being, but he didn't know that Spock was going to come back. He goes to the premiere of Star Trek III. No, Star Trek 2, excuse me. He goes to the premiere of Star Trek 2 and watches the death scene and everything, and then at the end, he sees the Genesis planet happen, you know, and he says, oh, okay, I'm going to be getting a call from Paramount. and he was able to use that, I'll come back if you let me direct the film or something like that. Yeah. Like I said, I don't know how truthful he's being.
Yeah, because I heard a different version. The one I heard is that the only reason they got him for the second one is they said, how would you like a really good death scene? And he signed on. And then he had so much fun doing the character in the movie, he was the one who said, what if we do a way that I could come back? and so, you know, doing the movie changed his mind. So, you know, I don't know which of those is true either. So,
yeah. Well, okay. So we move into the, I guess, the Dark Ages, because there was a big period of time after Nemesis when we didn't get any Star Trek other than, was Enterprise already gone by the time Nemesis came out? I don't remember.
It was either already gone or on the way out.
So did you think that Star Trek was just something that was just done, or did you know that eventually something else would come back?
Well, I know that there's money in it.
Yeah.
So I knew it was going to come back. It was just a matter of how. I remember like rumors of different series, rumors that it was going to come back to TV, rumors that we're going to do an animated series. That was the one that excited me the most, was they were going to do an animated series that was going to be set like 100 years after the end of Next Gen. And the Federation is broken and cracked. And it was going to be a story of this one ship trying to rebuild the Federation. And they were going to incorporate bits of Borg technology into the security teams. And it was like, oh, this looks really interesting. And then, of course, it fizzled out and didn't go anywhere.
Right.
And then J. Michael Straczynski wrote a pitch of how he would reboot it going back to the Kirk and Spock era. And I think it's still online if you Google for it. It's really good. But it's J. Michael Straczynski, you know.
Yeah.
So it's a really good read, and I was really hopeful that would come through, but it didn't. And so I just knew it was a matter of time.
Well, we finally got the J.J. Abrams 2009 sort of Star Trek reboot, sort of.
Yes.
Sort of sequel. So when you heard that they were making a film that was going to take place in the original series and they're going to have new actors playing these same characters, I talk to people all the time that, no, I didn't want them to do that. And then there's other people that they didn't care if they did that. They just wanted more Star Trek. Where did you fall on that?
I was on, as long as it doesn't suck, I'm in. You know, I agree with, again, what something Peter David said one time is like, I don't ask for much. All I ask is that it doesn't suck. And also for me, the idea of recasting Kirk, going back to that timeline, for me is, there's a thing we love to do is we love to retell these stories. And recasting Kirk and retelling his stories with another actor moves Kirk from being just a TV show character played by William Shatner into a character of legend. He becomes a Robin Hood. He becomes a King Arthur. He becomes a Sherlock Holmes, someone that we retell these stories over and over and over again. Eventually we come back to them. He's reached that level of iconic. So for me, it was like, that was a good thing.
Yeah.
I like that. And, you know, when I watched the movie, I fell in love with it. I thought it was fantastic. I really like Chris Pine as Kirk. I love Quinto as Spock. Mm-hmm. The opening credits when George Kirk sacrifices himself, you know, I admit it, I cried.
Yeah.
I was like, damn, this movie's got me crying already. I'm in.
Yeah.
It does have a little bit too much of a we are destined to do this, which is a little bit of weak storytelling. But at the same time, you know, we got to get these characters together. This is what we want to see, is the classic cast all together. And again, it was fun. And that, you know, it's not a perfect movie. I still hate that they kill Spock's mom.
Right, yeah.
You know, and I'm still not a huge fan of, you know, Happy Red Matter Ball. but, you know, overall, I think it does more right than it does wrong, so I enjoy it. The second one, not so much.
Yeah. I think every guest that comes on the show said the same, said the same thing.
Yeah. Hell with it. The problem is when you let a 9/11 truther write your movie, you've got a problem from the beginning.
Oh.
You know, when a guy decides to, you know, it was an inside job, decides to make a movie about that it was an inside job for the Federation.
Yeah.
But for me, I think the biggest thing they could have done to fix Into Darkness once they lost Benicio del Toro was, instead of having a Cumberbund Benedict become Beacon, he should have been Joachim. If he had been, you know, Khan's right-hand man from 2.
Yeah.
I think that would have solved 90% of the problems in that movie. Oh, it's not Khan. Okay, yeah. I mean, yeah. It is. You know, it's still an augmented guy, but it's not Khan.
Yeah. Yeah, I never found... I've seen the movie probably 3-4 times now. I've never found any reason why Khan had to be in that movie.
No.
Other than they just wanted that moment where he reveals himself and have the fans, oh, it's Khan. It didn't have to be Khan. It could have been, it really could have been anybody. You know, you just had to explain that he was augmented somehow.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think they were kind of, I think they may have felt like they were over a barrel in that, because I remember when the first movie came out, almost as soon as it was out, everybody started going, well, the next one's got to be Khan because the second movie is Khan in the original series. I'm like, no, don't go anywhere near that guy. You haven't earned Khan.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, maybe do Space Seed, but you can't jump to Khan. We need that 15 years of I've been sitting on a planet waiting to kill you.
Well, yeah, that was the whole thing. The thing that infuriated me about Into Darkness was the when they reenacted the Spock's death scene.
Yes.
Except, you know, I mean, it's one thing to say, okay, well, we're going to swap it around. We're going to make Kirk be the one that dies. But when they made Star Trek II, we've got these two characters that have been, they're basically brothers. They've been together for years, decades. And then, And then we're going to reenact that, but with two characters that have only known each other for a couple of years, and they really don't even like each other.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
so,
they did.
And it takes all that away from it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they did not earn that moment of him screaming Khan.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got to earn. I mean, I agree with you. I thought it was a great idea to switch it up and have it be Kirk making the sacrifice. But still, again, you know, it shouldn't have been Khan. They didn't earn it at that point. It should have been a whole different. I mean, they still could have told that story, but not with Khan.
Yeah. What about Beyond?
Beyond, I think, is where they finally nailed it. They got a director who knew how to do an ensemble piece. It talks about military and war and survivors. You know, it's got a message in there, which Star Trek needs. Mm-hmm. And I thought the script was solid. I loved what's her name? The new alien lady.
Sophia Boutella?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. I thought she was a blast. You know, I loved the shouting and the thumping.
Yeah.
You know, we got to see Simon Pegg really have fun with Scotty, and we finally got Kirk or Spock and McCoy the way we should have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, especially I'm going to pull this on three. One, two.
Let Simon Pegg do some of the screenwriting. You finally had people writing the script that knew the show. You didn't have. I mean, J.J. Abrams was not a Star Trek fan. He's a Star Wars guy. He wanted to make Star Wars from the very beginning, mm-hmm. but he couldn't get it. He couldn't get it, so he started doing Star Trek, and he tried to make Star Trek in the Star Wars, in my opinion. But
yes, there is a lot of Star Wars in Star Trek now.
Yeah.
And some of it works. I actually like the phasers being the pulse firing things. I like the way warp looks now. But yeah, there it was definitely. I like more Star Trek in my Star Trek.
Yeah. Yeah.
I will say, though, the best thing to come out of all three movies, though, is the soundtrack. Michael Giacchino's music is phenomenal, and for me is right up there with some of the best Star Trek music. And every time I hear that, the enterprising young men, which, again, I love that guy just for his music puns.
Yeah.
That is a great piece of music, and now when I hear it, I think Star Trek. So.
Well, how did you feel about these films taking place in an alternate timeline? Because when I heard reboot in 2009, when I heard, oh, they're making a reboot. Well, if you make a reboot, that means that we're never going to see mm-hmm. my universe again, you know, because you can't go back and forth, you know.
Right.
but when they said reboot, but it takes place in an alternate universe, so it's really a sequel. How do you think they handled that?
I think it's an interesting way to try to square the circle, especially because, you know, well, if we do this alternate timeline now, we cut that whole problem of, well, we know what's going to happen. And I like that idea of, okay, the future is uncertain. We can do interesting things. But again, at the same time, like you said, it's like, but I love the classic timeline.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good stuff there. We don't have to ditch it.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, you know, so I'm a little column A, a little column B. I like parts of it. I understand why they did it, but still at the same time, it's like,
Well, the films at least brought enough love of the show back mm-hmm. that they were able to get CBS to agree to do a new series.
Yes.
So what did you think of this first season of Star Trek Discovery?
I was so excited for it before it came out. I love Brian Fuller. I liked the idea. I liked the original pitch concept that it was going to be an anthology series,
mm-hmm.
that each season was going to be set in a different time. You know, so we were going to get this first season, which was going to be in before the Kirk era, and then they were going to move forward. And from what I understand, that's the main reason Fuller left, is because CBS got cold feet on that idea and just wanted to, okay, we'll just stick with these main characters and these sets that we've already built.
Yeah,
And not have to recast and rebuild everything between each season. Which, again, is from a studio mindset. I can understand it, but I disagree with it. It's like, you hired this guy for a reason. Stick with his story.
Yeah.
And so I got nervous when Fuller left, And I got together with a group of friends to watch the hour premiere on CBS. And before it came out, I was very pro new series. I'm going to watch it. I'm going to pay for streaming because I'll pay money for Star Trek because I think Star Trek's worth paying for. You know, I was one of the few lone voices I knew on that of, mm-hmm. yes, I will pay for it. I don't care. And then I watched that first hour, and I was like, what the hell is this?
You didn't like it.
I did not like most of it. I mean, I love Michelle Yeoh. I thought the effects were great. I like Jug Jones. But when it ends the episode, and I think this is the biggest problem, if they had aired the first two episodes, I could have withstood it a little better. But where they ended it with her – here's the thing. With Michael Burnham lays hands on her captain.
Yeah.
For me, I was like, no, I hate you now. You just attacked your captain. You started a mutiny. You're about to start a war. I was like, okay, I hate your guts and I want you to die. You should be thrown into the brig and be let nowhere near a Federation vessel ever again. And ending it there really left me with a sour taste in my mouth. I did love the fact, though, that the captain did come out in time and with a gun, with phaser in hand, and going, mm-hmm. no.
Right.
It's like, none of this try to play this off. It's like, no, you're a mutiny under arrest. I did appreciate that they did that and not the, oh, I understand, you're very upset, da da da. And the whole idea of the Vulcan hello kind of bugs me too. It doesn't feel very Vulcan.
Yeah.
But my girlfriend subscribed to CBS and we started watching it. And over the course of the series, I realized that the show and the character herself actually agreed with me. that was a terrible thing to do, and she should be punished harshly for it.
Right.
And as it grew, as it found its legs, and as it grew on, and it got more Star Trek, and we saw more of Saru. God, Doug Jones is such a gift.
Oh yeah, yeah, he's great.
You know, I eventually, by about the sixth episode, I came around, and I was like, I still think you need to pay for what you did, but I'm on board now. And then by the end of the season, I'm like, okay, you stopped the war you started. I've come – okay, I like you now. But I tell you, after that first episode, if I had not watched it again, I would probably still be a, this thing's terrible. What the hell are they doing?
What did you think about all the Mirror Universe stuff they did in that series? Because they spent more time in the Mirror Universe than we've ever seen before.
We have, and I loved it. Because, like I said before, I like the Mirror Universe a lot. I like the way they did that. I love the cheeky little bit of they can't stand bright light because it's a dark Mirror Universe. Yeah. I was like, oh, that's clever, guys. That's almost a little too on the nose, but I like and I like the fact that the captain came through in another ion storm the way Kirk and everybody go through in the original episode of the Mirror Mirror. So I was like, oh, okay, cute. I'm still not sure if I like the fact that Michelle Yeoh's character made it back from that universe.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not the huge fan of Section 31 that a lot of people are. But, you know, I we'll see where it goes. It's an interesting idea.
Do you think that the Prime version of Lorca is dead, or do you think we'll see Jason Isaacs again?
I would love to see Jason Isaacs again. He's an amazing actor, and it would be great. I really liked Lorca, and I thought he was a really interesting Federation captain. And everybody kept saying, oh, he's going to be the universe. So I was kind of sad that they did that. And I think they've said it they could go either – the way they've done it, I think it could go either way. But the way it looks right now is like they swapped and that ship blew up. So Lorca's probably dead in both universes. But, you know, he could always get out of it.
Yeah, that's what –
we didn't see a body.
Yeah, right. That's my theory. But the way that they did it, because nobody ever said definitely one way or the other, mm-hmm. they left themselves room to get him to come back if Jason Isaacs, if they can back the money truck up enough to to intrigue him to come. So
Yeah. And I do love the fact that the evil Lorca, for lack of a better name for him, that we did see him quite explicitly die.
Yeah. Yeah, he completely burned apart. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, okay, dude, we don't have to worry about seeing this guy again. Good. interesting to see the mirror versions of the other characters and to see them get what was coming to them.
What do you think is gonna? So we saw the Enterprise in the finale.
Yes.
Do you think in this next season that we're actually going to see? I know they've cast Christopher Pike.
Yes.
Are we going to see them recast Spock a second time, or do you think that we're going to get some kind of a storyline where, oh yeah, but Spock is on an away mission, so he's not here.
Yeah, they're playing very coy with it, and so I'm pretty sure that they've got somebody in mind, but I think they're gonna play it as close to the vest as they can until it leaks out.
Yeah,
I can understand them not wanting to do it because once you put Spock in there, then it's kind of like the Luke Skywalker problem in the Last Jedi of, oh, I want to see more about Luke Skywalker. Screw everybody else. Get back to, you know, I want to see what Spock's up to.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I want to stay on the Enterprise now. You know, the Discovery can go off and do what it wants. I want to see what Spock's up to. I know that they've announced that they're going to do flashbacks to when Burnham and Spock were kids, and we're going to see them being kids and what their life was like.
Right.
But again, with the opportunity of having the ship there, having Pike, and my first thought when the Enterprise showed up was Spock is on that ship.
Yeah.
And to get a scene with Sarek and Spock, you know, together, you know, even though, you know, at this particular point in the timeline, they're not exactly getting along. Mm-hmm. I think that's an opportunity they'd be stupid to squander.
Yeah, it'll be hard for them to be able. They won't. I don't know that they'll be able to have Sarek and Spock together, because the first time that we meet Sarek in the original series, it's pretty much stated that they haven't spoken to each other in a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
So if we suddenly see them in a prequel and they're on screen together, then that kind of contradicts what they had said previously. Which is a problem that you run into when you start doing prequels anyway.
Yeah. Well, it could always be a matter of they just stare at each other and Burnham talks. And
yeah.
You know, I haven't spoken to my father in years. Nobody said anything about seeing him.
Yeah.
But we're definitely going to – and it does make sense if some – but we still don't know what the hell's going on the Enterprise, that they asked for help. Mm-hmm. But it makes sense that they would go to Sarek for some sort of reason, that they asked for the Discovery in specific.
Yeah, because this is a period of the Enterprise that we've never seen, because I read the novel Desperate Hours that came out when Discovery started, and on the first page it gives you a timeline that the novel takes place 1 year before the Vulcan Hello, when Michael was you know, second in command of the ship. Actually, she gets that promotion in this book. And it also says that it takes place 2 years after the Cage, so we're going to be seeing a time period up for the Enterprise that we've never seen before. They can have all new crew. The only thing that we know is that Pike is the captain, and Spock is there. We don't know if he's what capacity he's in, because, you know, number one was Major Roddenberry was the first officer in the Cage,
but yeah, and they've already announced she's there. Yeah, they've announced that they've recast her.
Okay, so
we know we're going to see her.
Okay,
which I know a lot of friends of mine who are just like over the moon that they're going to get more. They're more excited to see number one than they are to see Spock.
Yeah. Well, what did you think of the ship itself?
I think the Discovery is an interesting design. Everybody keeps pulling from that Star Trek Phase Two.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, the Next Generation ship was sort of based on that. So it was kind of nice to see someone actually just out and out do it. I'm not a huge fan of it, but it's grown on me. I like the way the interior bit spins. But I don't know if it's going to do that anymore now that we've killed the Spore Drive. And thank God we've killed the Spore Drive. I'm glad to see that go. I thought it was hokey. I understand it, and it was kind of cool. But it, like you said, by the end of Next Generation, we've written all this magic tech that we can do stuff with. You know, if the Spore Drive doesn't go away, we've got a problem.
Yeah. Yeah, they would have to find a way to say this can never be used again or something, or the mycelial network cannot be accessed again for 500 years or something like that, you know? So, okay. Well, where are you now in terms of your Star Trek fandom? Are you just a bigger fan than you've ever been, or just as much as ever? How do you feel about Star Trek?
I think just as much as ever. I've always been a huge fan. It was my first fandom. It will always be my first fandom. Like I said, you know, I've been following Star Trek since I was 4 years old. So it will always be with me. Even in times where I didn't exactly like the show that was on, I was still a Star Trek fan. I would read the books. I would keep up with it. You know, even if I wasn't watching the show, I kept tabs on it. What's going on? What are they doing? Okay, maybe I'll come back. Maybe I won't.
Yeah.
But I think we're in an exciting period right now. Discovery seems to have found its legs a lot faster than Next Gen did. I'm looking forward to seeing where they're going to go in the next season. And now with the Paramount-CBS merger possibly happening, where we can get more of the movie and the TV universes gelling, I think is good.
Yeah.
So I'm like Star Trek itself, I'm hopeful for the future.
Okay. Well, as a Star Trek, this is a question that I ask everybody that comes on the show. As a Star Trek fan, we're constantly exposed to little tidbits of philosophy, life lessons, and things like that. So what do you feel like Star Trek did for you that made your life better?
It taught me the importance of hope and for the future, that, you know, that we can overcome our baser instincts. You know, I keep harping on the Gorn episode because it really, for me, is both viscerally and intellectually as a kid, it really hit me. And that whole idea, and this is one of the reasons I actually prefer the original series over Next Gen. The original series for me is all about overcoming our better nature and that struggle. You know, I will not kill Lizard Man today. You know, we have a savage inside us, but we are trying to be civilized. And that struggle is important. And I think in Next Generation, they lost it. Part of it was because Gene going ultimate utopia, that, you know, people don't argue anymore. Humanity has achieved that level of civilization, that we don't argue amongst ourselves anymore. We're perfect. It's these aliens that are having a problem. We have to teach them how not to, you know, be racist.
Right.
Or whatever. Whereas in Star Trek, there in the original series, it was, no, I still want to kick this alien in the face. And sometimes you have to. But, you know, it was that struggle. And I think that struggle is incredibly noble. And I think that, you know, the majority of the time, we can win that struggle. And it's disappointing when we don't. But it gives us something to strive for.
Yeah.
That we should strive for, especially these days. We need hope and tolerance and understanding each other versus just screaming at each other.
Okay. Well, tell us where people can find you.
Okay. You can find me at DragonCon. You can find me at Hoolanta. DragonCon is over Labor Day. I'm with the American Sci-Fi Classics track. We have a Facebook group, DragonCon, American Sci-Fi Classics. You can find me at Hoolanta, which is May 4th, 5th, and 6th in Atlanta. And DragonCon's in Atlanta as well. Online, you can find me, like I said, on the Facebook group. You can also find me on the Twitter as Gary_Mitchell, and that's Mitchell with one L. And I have an Instagram, Sneezy the Squid, but I don't use it that often.
What exactly is Hoolanta? I had not heard of that before.
Hoolanta is a Doctor Who convention.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. And I co-run the Etherworlds track with Darren Bush, and we cover everything that's not Doctor Who.
Okay. Well, it was nice talking to you. I appreciate you coming on.
Well, thank you, sir. It was a pleasure. I always love talking Star Trek.